Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Welcome into the bullpen. I am Del Olaleye. And if you were wondering how much work I'd be doing now that I'm back, well, it'll be 6 days a week. This time without anyone else in the building, at least as far. There are people in the building. Let me correct that. There's no one in this room with me because Joe George has a birthday party to go to. A grown man has a birthday party to go to, so he can't come do his job. I imagine that was driven by a significant other, because I don't think I would be like, you know what, I can't come and do the show because I have a birthday to go to. It feels like something that you do for someone else. But Joe George isn't here. And also, I don't know how this configuration went beforehand, because I just got back a couple weeks ago. But it's Joe's creation. He did this with me like years ago as far as getting the producers together to do a show. So I'm assuming this is Joe's creation. He's not here, by the way. I'll mention that again. But it used to, what was it, Josh? Was it Joe and Andrew, Joe and Sean? Who did Saturdays?
So it's usually supposed to be Joe and Andrew, but for whatever reason, their schedules never align. So it was like Joe and everyone else on rotation.
Okay. So that's Josh. You'll hear him quite a bit, considering I'm doing this show by myself. So I'll talk to Josh, get to know him a little bit, because it's my first time meeting him. And we have Trey in there as well, who plays for Rice. He's an intern. It's probably his last day because football season begins in earnest. At least camp does. So I'll talk to Trey a little bit, too, about what it means, what you do all summer getting ready for this moment as fall camp arrives. It's a little weird when you just meet a person, then you look at their bio on the Rice football site, and you realize Trey is a guy who was a walk-on at one point that earned a scholarship, three-time honor roll at Rice. So I don't know him at all, but the bio tells me a little bit. So we'll talk to Trey a little bit later. Just talk a little bit in the way of college football, considering it's right around the corner. You've got news where Alabama, but Tua Tagovailoa said an SEC school offered him over $1 million to transfer with all the NIL stuff. And apparently Alabama was sniffing around Tyler Van Dyke, the Miami quarterback, earlier this summer. So it stands to reason, with their connection to the Tagovailoa family, that maybe Alabama was going after Tua after having Tua. We'll talk a little bit about what NIL means, what is happening at Georgia as another player has been cited for speeding, and just who should be good, who shouldn't be, and what it looks like for Rice. Because I was looking at the schedule as I was trying to figure out stuff about Trey. And Rice was started off pretty good last year, 5-4. Look like they're on their way to a bowl game. Then unfortunately lost their last four. Still made a bowl game. So I'll talk to Trey a little bit about how that went down. When he found out they were still going to play in a bowl game after going 5-7. Because most of you know that the mark you have to get to is at least six wins. They got there with five. So we'll discuss that. And among other things, the NFL, the Dame Lillard memo, so much to get to. But we'll start with like a change in 97.5. Because when I first got here years ago, I'm just going to be honest, there wasn't a lot of color in the building. Not a lot. And I walk in today and all I see is color. And I'm not going to get more specific than that, but you should get it. If you've listened to the station before, you know the deal. And you've got a producer. Josh is in my role. I was a weekend producer at one point. I'm going to apologize right now, because I walked in here and I was freezing, so I could barely retain any information. There's another gentleman in there that I have not named. I don't want to misspeak and say your name wrong. What's his name again?
Mario.
Mario. Mario's in there as well with Trey. So the difference in profile for this place, and look, I was here over a decade ago as an intern, so you can see how change goes. But I was like, all right, it's a little different, and I like it because, I mean, you've seen the lineup. You know what it looks like. I mean, and it was like that on the weekends too, but things are a little different now here at ESPN 97.5 and certainly on the bullpen today. And speaking of the bullpen, let's get to the Astros. They lose last night to the Rays 4-3 in a game where Christian Javier started off, let's just say suspect. He gave up the 3-run home run after he couldn't get out of the first inning. He hit a batter and it's been his problem throughout the season, not being able to close out innings, and it led to a 3-run homer, and the Astros were immediately down 3-0. And Javi, over his last 7 starts, it had an ERA over 7. So it felt like more of the same, but he got it going. 5 scoreless innings after that, kept his team in the ballgame, and the Astros eventually tied it with the Jose Abreu 2-run home run on an off-speed pitch that he was a bit out in front on, but he held that the bat in the he held the bat back and got that over the Crawford box into the Crawford boxes over the left field wall to make it 3-3. And then a former Astro came back to haunt the team in the 9th. Jose Siri, the Astros were playing him to hit the ball the other way, and he pulled a breaking ball from Presley into left field. Corey Jolks was shifted over, so he had to have a long run, and Jose Siri stretched that into a double, and that eventually led to a couple sacrifice flies to give the Rays a 4-3 lead, and the Astros could not come back in the bottom of the 9th. They lose, the Rangers lose to the Padres, so they still remain 2 games back in the AOS race. And this is a race that feels like it should be over if you consider what the Astros have been in the past. And there was a clip from a Ranger a couple months ago where he talked about how this was the Rangers division lose. And I kind of scoffed at it because you're the Rangers. You guys don't win anything. And particularly when the Astros have been as good as they've been since 2015, it's pretty much been us laughing at the Rangers anytime they make an acquisition saying it wouldn't matter. But so far, the Rangers have held them off, and they were able to get the final win in their series this week where the thought was the Astros would tie them and just go by them. The Rangers blew out the Astros 13-5 on what was that Wednesday and maintained their 2-game lead, but it's still 2 because the Rangers had a bad night against the San Diego Padres, a team that you might consider one of the more disappointing teams in baseball. As I mentioned Jose Siri, now in the app on my phone, Siri's acting up a little bit, but the Padres 50-54 get a win last night against the Rangers. So to keep the Astros within 2, and we'll see what happens tonight with Hunter Brown on the mound against the Rays. A Rays team who had struggled coming into the series. They were the best team in baseball to start, but since really the month of July began, they've been awful. Baltimore has overtaken them in the AL East, and now you look at Baltimore and the Rays and the Astros fighting it out and obviously the Rangers fighting out for the best record in the American League. But so far, the Rangers have held the Astros off. The Astros did make an acquisition. Kendall Graveman, a former Astro, is back with the Astros. They trade Corey Lee to make that move. And Kendall Graveman was on that Astros team in 2021 that made the World Series and lost to the Braves. He obviously not been around the last couple seasons, at least season and a half. So they have him under control for the next season and a half. And that's a guy who cried. That'll be his endearing moment with the Astros. When he was traded to the Astros, he cried. Not because of he was sad to be an Astro, just because of his connection with his former team. But he's back in Houston. He called Houston home. He's happy to be back. We'll probably see him tonight if he's ready to go, because the Astros bullpen has been taxed over the last month or so. And Ryan Pressly, for the second consecutive game, gave up runs in his outing. In the game against the Rangers, the one they won, it was 4-1. And thankfully for the Astros, he was able to hang on after giving up a couple. And then last night, I'm not a baseball guy, and I noticed everyone in there saying, hey, if he asked me about baseball, he's screwed because we don't know baseball. I'm one of you guys. I don't particularly care that much about baseball, but you know, you do this, you watch the games, and the Astros are good, so you have to pay attention a little bit. So I'm going to use a term that I think I'm correct on. I think he blew a hold last night. That's what that's called when he comes in and the game is tied and he doesn't get it done. He allowed Jose Siri to get that double, and then, as I said, a couple sack flies drove it in. So Ryan Pressly's last couple of outings has given up runs, and he's kind of that guy when it's not a tight ball game. Usually, if he's up, if the game is 4-1, he's going to give up a couple and then make you nervous and then find a way out of it. For whatever reason, he's been much better when the games are tight. I don't know what that's about. It's a weird closer mentality. There was an Astros pitcher a couple years ago now, maybe even 4 or 5 years ago, who I think it was Ken Giles, actually. He was terrible in games where he wasn't trying to close it out. When he actually was going to close the game out, he was great. A former employee here, Raheel, and I would just call him Mr. Perfect, because anytime he needed to close the game out, he would get it done. And that even kept going when he was traded away. But anytime there was a tie game or he wasn't in a save situation, he kind of stunk. And that was one of the reasons he's no longer an Astro. But as I mentioned, the Astros do acquire a former Astro, Kendall Graveman. He might be the guy that would have pitched in that situation last night where Ryan Pressly is really the only guy they have left as far as who you want to put in the ninth inning. You might put Kendall Graveman in that spot when there's no chance for a save, and you save Ryan Pressly for maybe you probably wouldn't in that case, because if you want to keep him give him a chance to get a save in a game at home, he may not pitch unless the game went into the 11th inning. But I hope Kendall Graveman can kind of take that role over and leave Ryan Pressly as a guy who can close out games for the Astros as opposed to coming in when games are tight or tied. And the Astros will need Graveman and the rest of that bullpen to kind of step up. They haven't been great recently, and that has led to their inability to catch the Rangers, despite their ability to dominate the Rangers in those series. Around those Rangers series, we've seen, I guess you would call it, one step forward, two steps back for the team, and another step back, at least a little bit, last night against the Rays, and they'll get a chance to put Hunter Brown on the mound to kind of amend what happened last night. We'll continue to talk about the Astros going forward, but as I talked about before I got there, there are other things to discuss, whether it be the Texans making a signing at tackle. And I was thinking about this when I was trying to figure out how I would talk about it. When you have to start talking about what signing a tackle means for Charlie Hecht, a Texan swing tackle, it means there's not a lot to discuss. I was like, this is where I'm at, where I have to discuss what does signing George Fant mean for Charlie Hecht when the Texans are kind of situated or settled at that position. You got Tunsil, who obviously is a highly paid, really good left tackle. You have Titus Howard, who wasn't great last year, but they're paying him really good money, top 10 money at the tackle position. So you have a top 5 tackle in terms of a player, and he's, as far as tackles overall, the highest paid in the league. You also have Titus Howard, a top 10 tackle as far as pay, how he's paid, but I'm not sure he's a top 10 tackle. We talked about it during the week on the bench. He's probably, how he played last year, a top 20 tackle. So you might call it an overpay, but if you can solidify those two positions and make sure they're there for the long term, you do it. You look at the rest of that offensive line. You talk about whether it be Questenberry or Juice Scruggs at center, maybe one of them plays guard. You got Kenyon Green, who's back, working back from an injury, and you also have Shaq Mason. So if the Texans are going to be strong at any position on offense this year, it should be offensive line. We'll get more into what George Fant might mean going forward and why he's a Texan and why he's not a Titan, because he did work out for the Titans a little bit earlier in the week, and then he worked out for the Texans, apparently looked good, and they made that signing. The Texans, we talk about teams who stink and how much they have to pay to bring a guy in. The Rockets may have to had to deal with that when they overpaid for Fred VanVleet, what they paid to get Dylan Brooks. Maybe the Texans saw some of that this week when they brought in George Fant. I'll talk about that on the other side. This is the bullpen. Still freezing in here, so if my teeth start to chatter or I start to stutter on a word, it's probably because of hypothermia. But I don't know who set the temperature, because it doesn't work in here anymore. I was told when I got back it's in AD's room. I don't know how that works out, where he has it. Josh says he doesn't know how it works either. Why the temperature gauge is in the engineer's room and I can't find it. I don't know if it's computerized. That might be what it is. I'm not sure. But it's cold in here. I should have brought sweats. That's a mistake that I won't make next week. And next week it'll probably be broken. So that's just how it works here sometimes. But the bullpen, Dell here, my first appearance on the show. No one else here because Joe George is at a birthday party somehow, some way. Josh is here. We've got other people in the building. We'll talk to them a little bit later. But join in the conversation. It's a Saturday. I don't know what you guys are doing on a Saturday. If you're driving around, we'd love to hear from you. And what John Granato's calling me. If it is that John Granato, the guy who hosts the bench, the guy who I produce the show for, he may be a guy who's unaware that I'm doing this. It's kind of how it works. I'll talk to him in the break. I'm not sure what he's doing. He's like my mom. He's always listening. I'm just not sure why he's calling, just like my mom. We'll be back on the other side of the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5.
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Price a little high for starting pitching at this point. Are you still optimistic to get a start?
The prices are always going to be high for starting pitching. If we can land something that makes sense, then we don't have to mortgage the farm. We may be in business on doing that. But right now, with Urquidy coming back soon, we feel really good about our rotation. You know, our top four guys are really good. Belak's been solid, and he's been holding it down and getting Urquidy back. We feel like this is a really good rotation.
When it comes to a bat, is left-handedness still a priority?
If we can add a left-hand bat, that would be a priority. It's just that there's not many of those available. And we do feel really good about our two, Alvarez and Tucker. If we can add something to that, that would be intriguing.
Astros general manager Dana Brown talking about what they could possibly acquire. So the Kendall Graveman move isn't the final one if they have their way. Starting pitcher, possibly a left-handed bat. We've heard a lot about who they could go after, whether it be Cody Bellinger, Dylan Cease. So the Astros still in the mode of trying to add talent to a roster as they try to make another World Series run. So John Granato was calling me about the temperature gauge. It is an AD's office. It hangs from a wall. And it's a very simple product to use. It's just weird that it's in there and you have to walk in there. So it was set at 68 degrees. So that is teeth chattering, hypothermia, like in this building. And because of how the room is set up, even with the door open, no warmth was coming in. So it felt like in Houston, it's like if it's 10, it's 98, but it feels like 110. That's what we get. It was 68, but it felt like 55. So we'll see how it plays out. So John was actually helpful, something he's not normally like. But he's, I guess, cruising around listening on the Saturday, so I appreciate that from him, mostly because it means I can get through the show without running out of here and going to get a sweater. So we'll see how that plays out. Josh came prepared. He's got the hoodie on. He's ready to go. He's got the sweats on. So I'm taking my cues from him next week.
Every Saturday, I make sure when I walk in my closet in the morning, look for some of the thickest sweats that I have before I go to work.
That's a man who understands his environment. And this environment was one where someone, like, I don't know who was here earlier. It wasn't someone who works on a Saturday. It had to be someone who works on a Friday night. And I got some theories about who did that. And I'll keep them to myself because people are a little sensitive around here. Whether I mention their name or don't mention their name, which is it's a weird thing. But I'll keep that to myself. Dana Brown, the Astros are trying to acquire players. They're trying to get better. So you can only thing you can ask for. We'll see how it plays out as we get closer and closer to the deadline. The Texans did acquire a player, as I talked about in the previous segment. George Fant. George Fant is I guess you'd probably call him the swing tackle this season. He played for the Seahawks. He was most recently a Jet. When he's healthy, he starts, but he won't start here. So it does give the Texans some depth when you think about a roster in the past who's had a lot of guys who were just hanging on, it felt like, in the NFL. You sign a couple guys because you don't want to be really good, but you still have to build a roster. And that felt like how the Texans attacked free agency the last couple of years when they were unsettled. And they were unsettled from the top down, whether it be the head coach, and really it was focused on the head coach, whether it be Cully or Lovie Smith, a couple guys who didn't feel like guys who were going to be part of a future where the Texans were any good, they would be called short-timers, and they definitely were. Both lasted a year, both got their checks, which I congratulate them for, and now the Texans appear to be serious about trying to be a better football team. And acquiring George Fant, it's not a big acquisition, but if an injury occurs, you have a guy who's played a lot of football and who started a lot of games. He's an average player, and that speaks to why he was still in the market at this point in the year, but never can have enough depth on the offensive line, as I use that tried and true cliche. I mentioned that he worked out earlier in the week with the Titans. The Titans did not sign him, and mostly it's because they didn't reach his asking price. Fant signed a one-year deal worth up to $4 billion. So that means probably based on incentives and how many games or how many snaps he takes. But according to sources with knowledge of the situation, Fant received an offer from the Titans below what he was seeking and chose to pursue other opportunities. So I don't know if that was we suck tax that the Texans had to pay to get George Fant in, pay a guy a little bit more because you stink as a football team and the only way you can acquire quality players is to pay them more. But they outspent the Titans. The Titans had a value that they had on him and said he's asking for a little bit more than we're willing to spend. And now he's not a Titan. He's a Texan. And frankly, the hope is we never see him in an important game, because if we see him, that means one of the tackles that they're paying a lot of money to ain't available. So the hope is George Fant never puts a helmet on for any really serious situation other than, you know, special teams. Maybe they throw him out there to be a field goal protector or an extra point protector. But other than that, the hope is outside the preseason, that helmet stays off because you want your starting tackles to play as many snaps as possible. And hopefully that's the case, because it's a team who likely will start C.J. Stroud, D'Amico Ryans this week, was very defensive-minded, non-committal about who a starting quarterback will be. Frank Reich said no. Bryce Young is our starter. That's our number one. DeMeco's like, we'll figure it out. We'll have a quarterback in week one versus the Ravens. Don't you worry. Could we just name C.J. Stroud the starter? Can we stop with the games? No one wants to see Davis Mills play. Like, if it's – like, there are some – I was going to call them weird. There are some people who love themselves, some Case Keenum so much, that they would love to see Case play no matter what, just because of his connection with the city, his time here, and his past as a Houston Texan. But the only way forward to play C.J. Stroud, and I get maybe some of the apprehension, because if you play him and he's not ready, it's very difficult to take him off the field and then go put in Davis Mills and go, well, we played C.J. too early. We shouldn't have done that. He was struggling too much. We're going to put in Davis Mills and maybe bring C.J. back later in the year. Because once you throw him out there, you have to leave him out there. You don't pull a young quarterback unless your name is like Brian Flores. And that's probably why he's not the Dolphins head coach anymore, among other things. But I don't think DeMeco Ryans wants to pull C.J. Stroud once he has to play him. So the hope is that he's ready. You don't have to worry about it. And no matter what it looks like, he shows enough to say he's clearly better than these other two. And that's the way forward, because if you have to pull him, it becomes a different ballgame altogether. So that would be the only reason you don't start him week one, other than maybe you're afraid the Ravens will destroy any confidence he has, because that's a team hoping to win a Super Bowl. But other than that, you hope and pray that he's ready to go. And the Texans have done, looks like they've done quite a bit to protect him early on. The receivers are a different ballgame. Tank Dell is in the fold. You've got Robert Woods, Nico Collins. We'll see what John Metchie does coming back from his illness. But at least the offensive line should be good if Kenyon Green can reach the form that they thought he was going to reach when they drafted him in the first round. And then you have to hope that Damian Pierce has another good year, and you try to figure out the wide receiver position. And the Texans are building a team kind of maybe not in reverse of how other teams do it, but you look around the league and you look at all the young quarterbacks who have succeeded when they stepped into the role. They've had a number one. Even before Ja'Marr Chase, there was T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. And maybe you don't think one of those is a number one, but T. Higgins is going to get money like a really good two or one when it's time. And then obviously they draft Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, I will blame the offensive system in Miami, but once they got Tyreek Hill after they drafted Jalen Waddle, they had their one, and Tua, when he was healthy, is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You just go around. Justin Herbert started his tenure with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. Even when Pat Mahomes didn't really start in year one, but came in year two, he had Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. The formula seems pretty clear. Have a number one wide receiver on the roster, and you give your quarterback a real good chance to be good early. The Texans don't have that yet. If the season goes poorly and the draft pick they traded to get Will Anderson is really high while Marvin Harrison Jr. is sitting there, people are going to have a conversation about why did you need Will Anderson? But the Texans and their projection is six and a half wins. So the Texans are going to say, no, we're going to win too many games to be in a position to take Marvin Harrison Jr. But That is a question to look. I call it the game within the game. Sure, the Texans want to win as many games as possible, but the draft pick they traded away, which is their own, the added benefit is being good enough where that draft pick means you're not missing out on an elite player, because they've done this in the past. They traded for Laremy Tunsil, and they were so bad, it resulted in the third pick overall. And the Dolphins turned that into, when you think about all the capital the Dolphins did, they traded down, traded back up. So when it came out in the wash, it was like Jalen Waddle, Bradley Chubb, and Tyreek Hill from one first-round pick the Texans traded them. So that's kind of how you can build a team when a team is awful but it's trading away picks for players. So if you are a Texans fan, hope and pray that there isn't a top-five pick waiting for a team because they made that trade. Because if it is, it'll go down no matter what Will Anderson is. If there's an elite quarterback available that a team takes because the Texans made that trade, it's going to be something they point to and go, why? Because even if you weren't going to take a quarterback next year, you have a pick that you can use to bolster your roster by taking a player there or trading down. So that's the game within the game for me. Are you good enough where that pick doesn't matter as much? And you got to hope the Browns pick that you still do have is one that is the higher one. And then the Texans go, we're smarter than you think we are. They've never been smarter than we think they are. It would certainly be a departure. Nick Caserio certainly doesn't have the track record of being smarter than everyone. And the hope is that with D'Amico Ryans in the fold, some of those things get switched around, and all of a sudden the Texans are making the savvy moves and not being being made fun of, which has been the case for the last decade or so. So, I mean, I could say it's been the last 20 years, but they have made the playoffs, never been past the divisional round, but the last 5 years or so have been really, really bad as far as decision-making and as far as being kind of a clown show and a joke around the NFL. Hopefully that begins to change, hiring a coach that people like quite a bit, D'Amico Ryans. But D'Amico, start C.J. Stroud. I mean, there's nothing here for you other than to start him, unless he's so unready that you have to start someone else. And then that means you made an awful pick to begin with, because we're going to see Bryce Young week one, and we'll see Bryce Young against the Texans earlier in the year. If it's Bryce Young versus Davis Mills or Case Keenum, it's a disaster. A disaster. So hopefully the Texans avoid that. I like Josh because Josh is a guy starting out and he's all about the breaks. Josh, you're going to learn, not with me because I'll get to break, that other guys you work with, they're gonna run right through them. Like,
oh, I got some names, but I'm not going to say it on air.
See, that's the difference between you and me. I already would have said them. Like John, Lance, run through breaks. They don't care.
Crazy.
Yeah, you like, not a lot of people know the background of when you're supposed to go to break, but I would say, like, now we should go to break, but they would still be talking at 12:34. So. But we're going to go to break right now. We'll talk more about the Texans and the Astros as we go. But some big news from the NBA came out. Well, as far as the NBA telling a player that to stop talking about things and his agent. We'll discuss that and what it might mean for player empowerment and why the NBA did not say the same to another player really doing the same thing. This is The Bullpen. I'm Dell. That's Josh. We'll be back.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back to The Bullpen. I am Del Olaleye. No Joel George. I was going to call him George a couple times already just because he's a man with two first names. But Joe is not here. He's at a birthday party. I'm going to assume it's an obligatory birthday party he has to go to. I don't feel like he missed work just because he wanted to go to a birthday party. Maybe it's a kid's party where his kid and someone else's kid had a play date and now he's at a party. Because if it's just Joe, he wanted to hang out at a birthday party, we're going to have a conversation on Monday. I didn't grill him on it yesterday. I mean, last couple of days when I found out about it. But we'll have a discussion just because I'm interested to find out, was it his plan or someone else's plan?
So I do want to also tell you, 2 weekends ago on the Sunday edition of The Bullpen, I made a list as far as best reasons or ways to get out of work. And I will say this, a birthday party was not on the list.
We're in a world right now as far as this particular field where you come in if there's a hurricane, if you can get into work. That's has been my experience in the past, where if there's a hurricane or a tropical storm, but if you can drive in, they never usually say, come in. We'll leave it up to you, is what they usually say. And it's an implied pressure to try to get in if you can. Look, we don't want you to be unsafe. We don't want you to look at us like we told you to drive through in awful weather. But if you can make it, do make it. And that generally is about the flooding in Houston. Look, if you can, don't put your car in danger, but if you can find a way to wiggle around all these water hazards, come into work. We'd love to have you. So when I hear birthday party as an obstacle to getting into work on a sunny Saturday afternoon, I start to ask, what's that about, Joe? And well, I'm going to talk to Joe on Monday about it. See, hopefully he had fun at the birthday party. But he's not here. I'm here on my first day with The Bullpen with Josh, getting you through this Saturday afternoon. I did want to get into the Shams stuff with Damian Lillard, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. We've got a couple people who tweeted the show. If you want to call in, it's 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776 if you want to call into The Bullpen. Got a couple, as I mentioned, tweets from Lamont. He says, I wouldn't mind the Texans scooping up one of these free agent running backs. I am not sold on Pierce. That running style is a very short shelf life. Reminds me of Barber from the Cowboys. That's a good comparison. Damian Pierce is a physical dude. Run you over as opposed to make you miss. How many carries before that style becomes something? I wouldn't call him gun shy as far as pulling back on the physicality. It just wears on a guy. There are very few guys who can do that and continue to play at a high level. Now, he's a rookie, so the Texans, as Najee Harris said this week, he didn't say specifically about the Texans, but he said about the running back position, that they'll squeeze all they can out of us and then toss us aside to go get the next one. So the Texans are probably in that mode with Damian Pierce. Hey, if he only gives us 3 good years, he was a mid-round pick anyway. We'll do that, and then we'll go get our next one. Not great for Damian Pierce with the running back position, but kind of how it has been the last probably 8-9 years. And the running backs are finally, I guess, trying to fight back, although there's really no recourse. What are they going to do? I mean, the CBA doesn't allow for an addendum to this where teams can use you and then decide not to pay you. And I mentioned Derrick Henry because he's the unicorn. I mean, mostly because he's bigger than everyone he's running against, practically. But he's the guy who has been able to sustain being in his late 20s and still putting up big numbers. And unfortunately for the Texans, he remains that guy. And he can go get a $150 against the Texans. That's sometimes on the low end. He's been in that range where 200 is certainly in the talking when we're talking about what he does against the Texans. And the Texans have had wide receivers who have killed them, mostly T.Y. Hilton. Derrick Henry's been their running back nemesis. We'll see if DeAndre Hopkins becomes a former player who decides he's going to have his best games against the Texans. And if Ryan Tannehill's a quarterback, not a great quarterback, but good enough to lead his team to a number one seed and multiple playoff appearances, as long as he's healthy, I wouldn't overlook the Titans just because when he's been on the field, they've been pretty good. And Mike Vrabel, for all his failings as a DC in his 1 year here in Houston, he's been a really good head coach and squeezing the most out of that team. So if Tannehill is healthy, I wouldn't look past the Tennessee Titans as far as winning a division one more time. But if you want to tweet the show, tweet at me, DelV2. Josh, you have a Twitter account?
I am Jay Chevy on the Twitter.
So if you want to tweet the show, you tweet at me, you tweet at Josh. We'll try to respond as quickly as we can. But I did mention Damian Lillard before we went to break, and I talked about Shams a little bit in this segment. Shams Charania, noted newsbreaker for the NBA. Now, this isn't news he broke. He just happened to be the guy who tweeted it first. It was a memo. So it went to all the reporters and it went to all the teams. Maybe one team leaked it to Shams first, but everyone could have had access to this. Shams did, he talked about it a little bit and what it might mean. If you don't know, Damian Lillard only wants to play for the Miami Heat. And that has never been a problem in the past for players to say, hey, trade me here and that's all I want. That's the only team I want to play for. We have a guy who's no longer in town but loves this town. James Harden did it. Well, he's done it now 3 times in the last, let's say, 18 months. Philly hasn't acquiesced yet, mostly because he only wants to play for the Clippers, and the Clippers are like, we won't even trade you Trey Mann for him right now. So Daryl Morey, noted really good friend, at least he thinks he is, of James Harden, until that relationship went sour because maybe Daryl Morey didn't live up to a promise, is not going to be a guy who just gives away James Harden. He was able to get James Harden for Ben Simmons, a depressed asset. I'm not talking about his mental state. I'm just talking about as a value. Now we have James Harden 1 year. The guys in the room are laughing. I wanted to be clear. I did not, because I know that's been a thing for him, and I did not want people to think I was talking about his mental state. But yeah, I guess it plays.
Way to clear that up, though. Yeah. Way to clear that
I just
up.
Didn't want people to, oh, look at him talking about Ben Simmons. But it's a thing. And Daryl Morey held on to Ben Simmons, even though he would not play, and go, look, I'm not trading you until I get what I want. And James Harden, after hearing enough of Kyrie, said, I want out and I want to go to Philly, and that's where I want to go, and they made that trade. So he's in line to – he wants to be a Clipper, but the Clipper's like, nah, we know he wants to play here, and we know he's 34, and we know he's only got 1 year left. We're not giving you anything. And Daryl Morey says, okay, we'll wait. And apparently Portland is in that mindset too. It's a little different. James Harden isn't a Philly legend. He's maybe a Daryl Morey legend, but he's not a Sixer legend. But Dame Lillard is. And he finally did what everyone wanted him to do. Ask out. Go to a contender. The problem is for him, and maybe more importantly, the Trailblazers and NBA Twitter, at least far as the media members, he has to go to one team, and it limits the capability of Portland to make a trade, and it limits, I guess, meet the media to talk about where he could go to. Like, if the conversation is only about the Heat and you can't write an article about what he would look like on the Raptors or the Sixers or the Celtics or whoever, I guess it becomes less of an interesting story. And the media has pushed back on this particular request. And now the NBA has as well. This is Shams discussing what the memo and what it might mean for Lillard and the Blazers.
Yeah, so this just came in now. I just got this. The NBA sent a memo to its 30 NBA teams about informing them that they have interviewed Damian Lillard and his agent Aaron Goodwin about his stance that he only wants to play in Miami, that he wants to trade, as we've reported via sources, but also that, as we reported and as his agent has said publicly, that he only wants to play in Miami. And the league advised both Lillard and Goodwin that any future comments of the sort, as far as him wanting to only play in Miami, will be potentially subject him to discipline, I'm told, in this memo, if those comments continue, as well as a warning to the NBPA that any future comments by players, their agents, that are similar to the ones as far as I only want to play for this specific team in a trade request, if that's made, that could also be subject to potential discipline as well. But in reading this memo,
that's Shams Charania discussing the memo. It's a longer memo, but that's kind of the gist of it. The NBA did not like the how public it was that Aaron Goodwin and Damian Lillard actually hasn't said anything. He's worked it through his agent. They don't like how public it was that in the potential that Damian Lillard would not show up if he was traded to somewhere other than Miami, or he would not play at his best because he's not where he wants. And they're trying to, hey, don't be so public about your demand. We're used to guys wanting out and wanting to go to a specific place, but could you not make it so it looks like it's cutting off 28 other teams? Just be, let's say, discreet. Float it out there to the teams, and they interviewed the teams as well, and the teams are saying, well, for the most part, what Aaron Goodwin said in his denial is consistent, because what Aaron Goodwin has said publicly, or at least as far as media reports, is whoever trades for Dame not named the Miami Heat would get an unhappy player. I don't believe he's ever said Damian Lillard wouldn't show up. At least he hadn't said that publicly, and he hadn't said that Damian Lillard wouldn't try his best. Those have been floated out. Unnamed sources have said people believe that's what Damian Lillard would do to make things uncomfortable for any team who might trade for him, not named the Miami Heat. So far, he still remains a Portland Trail Blazer. That request was made like four Saturdays ago, so we're about a month in for the request. And we know the Kevin Durant thing took a little bit, went into the season. Kyrie, that took a little bit. This one, the Blazers are going to have all summer to make a move. It just changes to what they can do when the guy only wants to go one place and has been very public about it. So the NBA has fought back up against it. And yet, James Harden only wants to be a Clipper and not a peep. So somehow James won this PR battle where Damian Lillard's the one being potentially fine. And James Harden is the one going, yeah, you're doing this the right way, James. You know, do an interview about player empowerment and what it might mean. He said this earlier this week about how he understands why a player would move, but he also thinks the team who's making the trade should get good value because you don't want to screw everyone over. And James, Fat Suit James, quitting against Sacramento Kings James when he was a Brooklyn Net, somehow is the one doing it the right way. That's a departure from what we've seen. Damian Lillard, bad guy. James Harden, good guy. Not generally how it's worked out for those two. And all it took was Damian Lillard asking out. And now the man who said he would never run from the grind, which I actually don't blame him for actually wanting out of Portland. Now people are actually taking him to task for doing the thing everyone wanted him to do. Just not doing it the right way, because let's make it four teams, Dame. Doesn't matter what you want. Make it four teams so we can have a little bit fun in our trade machine. Josh decided not to yell at me to go to break, but I saw the clock, so we're going to go to break. We'll wrap up that segment with, I say, I'm all in on player empowerment. Let them choose where they want to go. And so what, he signed a long-term deal. They told him to tank in his best year ever so they could get a better pick, and then didn't trade the pick for an established player. They want to scoot. I don't blame him for that, but some of this stuff goes both ways. He feels like he was lied to, and he wants out. That's kind of how it is. Coming up next, we'll discuss more in the NBA. We'll get to some NFL stuff, too. I'm going to ask the guys who are in the building about youth sports and mercy rules, because apparently when you're the U.S. and you play New Zealand in baseball and you're 12 years old, there's no such thing. I'll give you a score on that, and I'll ask these guys what they think about the mercy rule and would they have been happy about being on the bad end of the score I'm about to tell them about. This is The Bullpen. I'm Del. He's Josh. We'll be back.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security? That's them right there. Right there.
Welcome back to the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5. I'm Dell. My first day on the bullpen. This normally would be a Joe George, Andrew, Sean, RJ. RJ's no longer with us. He's not dead. He's in Jacksonville. Although it's Jacksonville, so what's the difference? But also, Joe would be here, but he's at a birthday party. So normally Joe would probably be bringing you back today as far as in and out of breaks. But that's my job today. We'll see what happens next Saturday. There's not like a shower he has to go to or something. So we'll figure out Joe's weekend plans a little bit later in the week. But I mentioned this going into the break. Oh, yeah. Josh is here, too, our producer for the day and going forward, too. I mentioned going into the break, mercy rules in youth sports. Josh, did you play sports as a kid?
I sure did.
What sports?
So I played soccer, I played basketball, and I mainly ran track and field.
I played soccer, basketball, and then high school football. We know Trey plays for Rice, so at least football is on the resume. You can ask him, did he play any other sports? Step up to the mic, Trey. Trey's an intern here, plays for Rice. This is his last day because, you know, football season begins. Trey, what other sports did you play besides football?
So I actually played soccer, played basketball, and I ran track as well. Never got into baseball, so.
Well, that's his clue to say, don't ask me any questions about that sport. I got you. I remember. So no baseball. Mario, you as well? We'll get him in here, too.
I played basketball in junior high, and I attempted to play football, but I got smacked by a dude named Michael Gittriff, and I was like, I'm going to go back to basketball.
He got hit so hard, he still remembers this kid's name. That speaks how hard he got hit. That's real. If you can remember the guy who knocked you out of the sport you thought you loved,
bam!
That's real. So we've all played youth sports at a certain level, and certainly Trey at the highest level currently compared to the rest of us. Have you ever been beaten as bad as 43-1? Whatever comparison it has to be. Did you get beat in a football game 52-6? My last high school football game in the playoffs, first round, we weren't a good team, but first round of the playoffs, we went up to Central California school, and they beat us 52-6, something like that. We maybe scored a late touchdown so we didn't get shut out. That's the worst beating I've taken competitively. Have you ever been beaten in comparison like that?
Not even close.
Okay. 43-1 in a baseball game. This happened to the under-12 New Zealand team at the hands of the U.S. I don't know why there are 11,000 followers for an under-12 USA baseball team Twitter page, but I can't imagine there are 11,000 people that care that much about under-12 baseball, but apparently there is enough to get that type of following. And the score was 43-1. And remember, in youth baseball, I think it's a six-inning game. So clearly there's no mercy rule. I would imagine if you're getting a 43-1, you're just letting these dudes play and letting New Zealand get their heads bashed in. And there's a recap video and everything on the under-12 USA baseball team account. It's just them smacking New Zealand around. They don't actually, I guess they only have one camera angle, so we're not actually seeing like the home runs or anything. We're just seeing pitches at the plate and kids coming in and celebrating and all that stuff. Look, I don't promote headhunting, but if I'm a New Zealand player, someone's getting drilled in the ribs just because this game isn't ending. We're getting beat 43-1. I'm not saying a kid needs to throw one at someone's head because I don't like that in regular baseball or I guess Major League Baseball. But if a kid decides, you know what, this game isn't ending, they're not going to end it. I'm going to try to end it by starting a brawl or hitting someone in the butt with a baseball. I wouldn't be against it because I didn't play a lot when it was, I started in soccer, but I didn't play a lot in my senior year in high school playing football. So 52-6 to me was like, man, this team, we're getting our ass kicked. But I'm not taking a beating. There's no Michael for me to say stop playing football like there was for Mario. I was just out there watching the starters get drilled. But so I didn't have the same emotion. I was a senior, just ready. I was ready to end my high school experience. But 43-1 in a baseball game, you got to sit there for six innings and watch a team score 43 runs on you. And this was in, I think, Japan. So New Zealand couldn't even just go home. They had to stay in whatever hotel, probably a good experience, frankly, getting to travel the world. But it's not like you can be comforted by going to your local restaurant, whatever. maybe you love pizza. You go get pizza at home after you get beat up like that. You got to go back to your hotel, eat whatever is being served, and take that until you go see, until you play your next game. I don't know how you get to 43-1. How it isn't stopped. How there isn't some rule in place to go, okay, guys. Like in the Little League World Series, you can't get to 43-1. I think it's 10? I don't know what it is, but there is a mercy rule. It's 10. Mario's saying it's 10. There is a mercy rule. How? These are 12-year-olds, and in some cases 11, unless they're lying about their age. That's what I'd do if I was New Zealand. I'd say these kids are 14. That would be my explanation to everyone back home. Look. I don't know how many people follow the under 12 New Zealand baseball account, but if I'm them, I'm starting a rumor that all these kids are 14.
They got
15.
A beard. Yeah. They got a mortgage, a house, some kids.
That's Danny Almonte. That's a reference from way back for people if they remember it. That all these kids are Danny Almonte age. They shouldn't be playing. That's what I'm saying, everyone back home. Like a mortgage, a kid, a driver's license. They're actually buying beer with real IDs, not fake ones. Whatever it takes to take away the stench of getting beat 43-1. I don't even know how it gets there. It feels like there should be a rule in place. Anthony wants to talk about the baseball ass whooping. What's up, Anthony?
Y'all ever grow up and get your butt beat so bad that you wake up to the smell of spaghetti? That's the type of butt whooping these kids from New Zealand took. The coaches should have took the kids off the field when it was like 20-1 or whatever it was to 1. And be like, you know what?
He's right.
Yes, it's competitive, but these kids already getting beat down 20-1. Why are we going to let it get to 43-1? Go home. Eat that home-cooked spaghetti after that long butt-whooping nap and move on.
I kind of got it. I got to agree. I know everyone's saying, you play it out. You play out the string. If you don't want the team to celebrate, you don't let them score. But clearly, they weren't stopping these kids. How does New Zealand qualify for a tournament where they can get beat 43-1? Did a couple pitchers get sick? Were they pitching position players? Like, I'm not going to dive deep into it. I just know that the account from the U.S. Under 12 tweeted it out, and their 11,000 followers, which is mind-blowing. I don't know how you care that much about youth baseball that you would follow a Under 12 account, but 43-1 the final score in that one. So either we're really good and New Zealand is clearly terrible, or we were running out 17-year-olds. And New Zealand had no way to stop it. Because that's I played in a league where there was this big scandal where legitimately kids look like they should have been playing. I played like an under 12 soccer league where it looked like the kids should have been in high school. And they had to have a reform, like a meeting, and there was reform. And after that, from that point on, everyone had their own ID card. Like the league would take your picture, check your birth certificate like I guess you normally would. And you'd have to hand the ID to the official, the ref, and the ref would look at you and go, does this match up? Does this match up? This match up? I still remember to the day, the starting lineup would be like the coach would lay out the starting lineup on the field by our ID cards. You're playing left back. You're playing right back. You're striker. And then hand the IDs to the official, and the official then would look at us and go, okay, you fit. You're of age. You're of age. You're of age. And that's how they got cheating out of our league. Our team still won 4 titles in a row, so it didn't really matter to us. Young, too old, too young, didn't matter. We still won. And I guess maybe we were like New Zealand against – maybe we were the U.S. against New Zealand. 43-1. Look, I'm all about competition, but I'm just going home. I'm not playing for this team anymore. I mean, at least I'm not playing the U.S. team anymore. That's bad. What do you – New Zealand is having a pretty good run right now because the Women's World Cup is New Zealand. They're co-hosting it with Australia, so that's a major event. Had to have been a downer when I saw that score come across the screen. I mean, 43-1. That we're going home.
At what score do you change the channel?
If it's on, look, I can't say it wasn't on TV because on Friday I saw I know about ESPN running Little League World Series like regional games in the semifinals of the Southeast Regional. That's how deep they're into it now. They're doing it for the girls too now. Yesterday I saw a game come up where it's like Tennessee versus Alabama, whatever the score for the semifinals of the Southeast Regional. So that's how much they're craving for programming. They'll run the semifinal game of the Little League World Series, boys and girls side. But if it's 20-1, I wouldn't watch if one of my cousins was playing at that point. Like if I knew someone in the game, I'm turning the channel. I'm not watching this. I would, if the New Zealand kids didn't cry, I would say that's a victory for them because they're only 11 or 12. Crying is on the table. But 43-1, no one in here besides me took a beating like that. 52-6 as a 17-year-old kid in high school was as bad as it ever got, but it didn't get bad. 43-1 is like 800-6 in football, I feel like, because it was only six innings. So New Zealand, be better. And the U.S., I guess we're pretty good in baseball, at least if we're 12 years old. We can't win a World Baseball Classic when Shohei Ohtani's on the other side, but we can win a game against New Zealand for under-12 baseball. So shout-out to our team and the 11,000 followers to that Twitter account. That is the first hour of the bullpen. We'll keep it going. We'll talk a little bit college football because Alabama, I keep saying them, but there's an alleged SEC team offering quarterbacks a lot of money to come play with them. Trey, you can come in here, talk a little bit about what's up next for Rice because – Rice has improved. We'll see what Trey thinks of his team and what they are going forward as the Rice Owls continue to try to build on some of the success they had last year. First hour down, one more to go. The bullpen. We'll be back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.